In this episode of Hot Hardware's 2.5 Geeks, AMD's Hook is hitting the road. EVGA's mechanical wonder, the sights and sounds and systems of PAX East, and getting on Dell's Latitude. And yes, yes, we're going to give some stuff away soon, so stick around. Welcome back to another episode of Hot Hardware's 2.5 Geeks. The show where two of us are fully brained geek and one of us are partially geeked and perhaps lobotomized. I don't know. But I'm Dave, and I've got Marco and Chris with me, as usual, to stream about things in tech. Marco, how's your day going today, young fella?
It's going okay, and don't call me Dago. So there's like a... I'm a little stressed because I have a ton of testing to do for something that's coming next week, but I'm going to get it done for you all. Spectre and Meltdown have ruined my workflow, so I'm starting fresh with a ton of new numbers from 10 different platforms next week. So stick around.
There you go. There you go. Spectre and Meltdown, the ghosts in the machine causing you to roll up your sleeves a little more. You know,
I'm doing.
What doesn't kill you make you stronger, or something like that.
So for, I'm doing 100% all new testing, top to bottom, latest BIOS, latest drivers, latest Windows, fully patched for every piece of hardware. The numbers that we will put up next week for whatever article I may be working on, that's how desktop processors perform as of that day. Confident.
There you go. Confident. 100% confident. You don't have to worry about any patch degradations. Chris, do we have to worry about your performance degrading over time?
Always. I think I'm pretty well degraded already, but here I am.
What? By the way, what are you drinking that you might be partially degraded by?
The wonderful Stone's Arrogant Bastard Ale, which... has a very nice description to it, saying things like, you won't like it, it's doubtful you have the taste or sophistication to be able to appreciate the quality and depth of this beer. Nice things like that.
You know, I'm not sure I want to be insulted by my beer. You're drinking a West Coast IPA, so it's an arrogant West Coast bastard. If I'm not mistaken, Stone is a West Coast brewery. I'm imbibing this, which is... Maya May. There's a little doggy on it. I bought it because of the doggy. You know, I'm a dog fan, dog lover. But it is a nice, hoppy, juicy, unfiltered New England style IPA, because that's what we do here, is drink New England beer.
Right, you're a lot more relaxed. Yeah, I grew up. I may be in Maine now, but I did grow up in Southern California, about half an hour away from the Stone Brewery. So
that's right.
Very different style of beer. They're very in your face with the hops, and it's wonderful.
Yeah. Plenty o' bite. Kind of like us when we're overworked and underpaid trying to report on all things tech this week. And yeah, we're going to be in turbo mode today because Marco's under the editorial gun. I'm still clearing hurdles myself. And Chris, you're always working on little sleep. So we're going to dive right in and lots to talk about, though. It's been sort of a light week in terms of launches, but there's lots of scuttlebutt out there and some interesting things hitting the wires. First, we'll plug real quick the folks at Logitech with the C922 Pro Stream webcam that we are running on today. We are streaming at 720p. These cams actually pull in 1080p. We're actually encoding on 720p, which is a limitation of our system right now, but we're going to upgrade to 1080p. Stay tuned for that. These are great for streaming and webcasting. Good stuff. The Logitech C922 Pro Stream webcam. Thanks for the sponsorship there, folks, from Logitech. Let's dive right into all kinds of interesting stuff, but let's talk about a review that we just kicked into, and then we've got some interesting scuttlebutt in the wire as well. EVGA's Z10 mechanical keyboard review, a unique full-featured gaming deck. There it is, the EVGA Z10 mechanical keyboard. It's actually a long time coming for EVGA. They've been working on this thing and sort of teasing it for years. It's finally here. It's their first mechanical keyboard first peripheral in that space. Marco, you are the resident keyboard aficionado. Tell us what you think about that thing.
I think it's pretty awesome. They actually, EVGA hits all of the right notes except for one. But let me quickly just burn through some specs and get some of the particulars out of the way. So the EVGA Z10 is based on, they're pronounced Kale switches. They're available with a brown or blue Kale switches. Now, Kale is essentially a clone of Cherry MX switches. Cherry's patent expired on that original design. Other people's are now cloning them. And Kale is a copy, uses the same keycaps, you know, the same kind of crossed stem if you wanted to swap the keycaps. They're not exactly the same switches, different materials, slightly different actuation points and weights, but it's a very good approximation of a Cherry MX switch at a lower price. Now, EVGA has done some really cool stuff with the board itself, though. So first is the design. It's a nice full-size plank with an LCD built in at the top. In addition to that LCD, on either side, they have sliders for volume and to dim the backlighting on the keyboard. So quick, easy access to volume with a really unobtrusive slider. Same thing for the dimmer on the backlighting. You have USB pass-through on either side. You also have, you know, features you'd expect for gamers and key rollover, tons of macros. They did another cool thing with the macro keys. You have a row of macro keys on the left, but two additional ones on the right in the arrow where the arrow array is. But with the software included with the board, you can basically program any key to do whatever you want. There's also a really cool EVGA branded key. It's labeled G/PC. So you hit that E key, and by default, it'll disable your Windows key so you don't jump out of a game if you accidentally hit that key. But that too can be programmed to disable other keys as well. You have a nice braided cable, just a really hefty, nice design. One other cool feature for gamers. Well, two other cool features for gamers. The wrist rest, it's attached magnetically and it has three different positions. So if you have big wrists, big hands, you can sort of adjust that for proper support. And you have an oversized space bar. So, you know, if you're laying your thumb, and again, you have big hands, you can make sure that your thumb's in a comfortable position and still have access to that space bar. Now, the only negative, the lighting is only red on this board. It's not an RGB keyboard, so you can't adjust the color of the lighting. It's only available in red right now. But, it, you know, if red's your color, this is a really, really nice, really nice mechanical keyboard. That LCD, I should also mention, the LCD is multicolored. You could change the color of the LCD, and you can change what's displayed on there. It could show some in-game stats or even just hardware monitoring from your PC if you've got an NVIDIA GeForce card in there, I should mention. But, you know, overall, just a really good-looking board, definitely a killer first effort from EVGA.
You know what they say?
What?
Big hands, big wrist rest, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, well, you know, it is a what I would call, and I actually saw it this weekend at PAX. I actually streamed with my good friend Jacob from EVGA. Great guy. Sat in with him for a little stream live on the PAX floor. And I got some hands-on time with it myself. I know you had worked on that piece with our editor Chris. It is a you know, full-featured enthusiast deck. You get your hands on that thing, and it's like, you know, it is built for comfort. It is built for speed. It's all the above. It's really, really well built. Honestly, though, and I know you're a key switch, like total key switch maniac. I felt like those switches, felt great. What do you think about Kale versus Cherry Brown, which is what actually the version we tested were brown switches? Are brown versions of Kale. What do you think about those?
In my experience with Kale switches, they feel nice. My problem with them is like, what can I use for an analogy? I'm going to use that Korean cars as an analogy, right? Hyundai back in the day made a lot of crap, right? Like the original Hyundai Excel from, you know, decades ago was basically garbage, right? So because of that, I probably wouldn't buy a Hyundai today. Not that they're bad. They might be fantastic. I just have a mental block. Because I don't have the long-term experience and there's no, you know, we really don't know how Kale switches hold up over the long term like Cherry because they're fairly new. From touching and using them, they seem nice. I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt and say these are quality switches that are going to hold up over time. EVGA actually warranties the board for 3 years, so it's the warranty's three times longer than some Cherry boards. For that reason alone, just to, you know, give consumers comfort in knowing that they're going to back this board up. But I'm still a nut job personally. I want the real deal. I want Cherry switches or capacitive switches in a Topre.
Yeah. No, I can see that logic. I can tell you when I felt them, and I've actually had, I know, a couple of different mechanical switches. I've had Cherry Clears in my deck keyboard. I'm actually working with some Kales right now in an Alienware product. And these felt really, really nice. They were firm. They're probably a little bit firmer, I think, than Cherry Browns. And really had a nice solid feel to them. Like, you know, I could see flying on that deck. And I'm actually kind of, I mean, for me, it's a little bit large because it's so, you know, with the wrist rest and the LED readout, it's, you know, dialed in for gamers for all kinds of other stuff. I like a little bit lower profile keyboard, but I could see rocking on that thing, you know, for work on a workstation. It's a nice first effort. What do you think about the keycap thing? And I know, so you're talking about $150 product here. You got to keep costs in line, but you're a double shot keycap guy in terms of longevity. Is that a shortcoming?
You say that like there's an alternative.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, long term, any of the cheaper plastic keyboards, this is not an EVGA problem. This is across the industry problem. Any keyboard that has cheaper plastic painted keycaps are going to get shiny and ugly. It's just going to happen. You can get replacement keycaps. PBT, double shot PBT caps are like the best, in my opinion. They're a little heavier. They're much more durable. They don't get shiny. So, you know, swap out your keycaps if it gets shiny and you hate it. If you don't care, you like your hardware with a little wear and tear, so be it. But that's not an EVGA issue, though. That's industry-wide. And every time I pitch a keyboard maker on, make sure you include PBT, they're like, too expensive. Nobody's going to pay for it. So,
yeah.
So I've got a question.
I was going to say, Chris, do you double shot or what?
I would love to get some double shot keycaps. I'm not there yet, but I definitely want them. No, I was going to ask if it's even legal to release a computer peripheral or component without RGB in 2018. Like, do we need to get the FTC involved here or what's going on?
EVGA, they have always been the rebels in the space and they're just proving it with the Z10.
Yeah, that is true. But I mean, there are concerns with the longevity of the keycaps. In particularly, you may notice... I don't know about these particular caps, but variability between one key and another may be wearing differently over time and stuff like that, that I feel like Cherry really has locked down. You know, their QA testing is so high that all your keys are going to feel, you know, the same relative to each other as they do, you know, in 5 years or whatever. And the other side of that is a lot of the big proponents of mechanical keyboards, they're not just looking at, you know, 3 years down the road. They're buying this for potentially decades of use, just because mechanical keyboards can last that long. So do you think 3 years on the warranty is really enough for you to get comfortable with the non-Cherry keycaps?
I think that's stout. Yeah, but go ahead, Marco. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think it's fine. Personally, I usually, the only keyboard I've kept longer than 3 years is my Topre RealForce. I always end up just wanting to mix things up, switching between browns, blues. Actually, it's just between browns and blues. I don't like any of the linear switches. Right now, I've been rocking the Topre for years. I imported this thing from Japan before they were available here. So it's got to be 8 or 9 years I've been using this particular board. And I keep coming back to it. I just like the feel.
Marco has an issue. If ever there was... A KA Club, Keyboards Anonymous. Keyboards Anonymous, what is that?
Not anymore. I haven't been anymore because it was nuts for a while. When I wrote that first piece in 2009 talking about the switches, I probably spent $2,000 importing keyboards because you couldn't get them here. over the course of a year and a half, you know, you see a new switch, you can't buy it in the States. You get a Japanese buying service to get it and send it. You see an old switch on eBay, you buy it, you know, and I went through everything at one point, and I had to find what I liked, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's like anything else. It's like, you know, the carpenter with a solid skill saw, or, you know, the blacksmith with a serious, you know, I don't know, acetylene torch. It's tools, right? And you are a wordsmith, and you need your tools. You need proper tools for the trade. So good stuff. The folks from EVGA with the Z10 mechanical keyboard, check out our full review at Hot Hardware. We step through it in painstaking detail and really whittle it down for folks. It's something to consider. Definitely a great option in terms of mechanical gaming keyboards in the market. From the folks at EVGA, we've dealt with them for a long time. Great people over there, and you know, stand behind their product, and it's good to see that 3-year warranty to back it up. let's move on to the sights and sounds and systems of PAX East 2018. We've been chirping about this since the weekend when PAX kicked off, and spent some time with EVGA there and a bunch of other folks, from Nintendo to Dell to folks, even system builders like AVA Direct. Chris, you actually toured the floor. What were your general impressions of PAX East this year? Did the gaming community come out in droves, and was the PC enthusiast realm well represented?
So if you're there for the games on any platform, it's going to be a great place to be. Just booth after booth after booth of new games and tons of hands-on demos, and all that's great. The PC hardware side is a little thinner there, but I mean, it's not the point of PAX. That's where you're going to get more like CES or something like that for the flashy new hardware. But there was still a good representation there. And I like that at the PAX booths for the different manufacturers, I mean, they're set up for people to walk in, use their hardware, get some hands on, and really experience the high-end hardware that some people, you know, may not generally have access to in their general gaming life, or maybe they're want to shop around and get some hands on and can't find a store around them to check things out. It's a really cool experience from that perspective.
Yeah. If you get a chance to check out a PAX in your area, and they have PAX, we have PAX East here in Boston. There's PAX Prime, PAX West. I mean, they're in different regions of the US. PAX started from the Penny Arcade website. And it is if you haven't experienced it, if you don't know anything about it, it is basically a celebration of all walks of life of gaming, from simple, even like board games, to handheld, to consoles, to PCs, anything you can game on or with friends. That's what they celebrate there. And it's a cool little emporium of gamer geeks and all from all walks of life. And there's lots of crazy colorful folks there, cosplay folks and things like that. And it's fun. It's a fun venue for sure. And you're right, Chris, there's this, especially on the PC side of things, there's this setup for folks to come in, game on these PCs, game on the equipment, whether it be peripherals, components, laptops, what have you. And then even in a lot of cases on the component side, peripheral side, a lot of the guys like, you know, Kingston and Corsair and Gigabyte and all those guys, they're selling stuff there too. So you can try something out.
Give they're selling world. Stuff. And they're giving stuff away right and left. Like Gigabyte had a 3v3 Overwatch setup. You can play, who was it? Someone had PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds. If you got top 10, you got a headset or something. I forget who that was. And they've all got something in there. So it's great just to try your luck on whatever demo they have set up and see if you can walk away with something.
Yeah. Let's talk about a couple of the highlights we saw. We had a few articles up on the show. Nintendo Switch impresses with Wolfenstein 2 gameplay at PAX East. Surprised to see this. I walked by the booth and I was like, what? It's not playing, you know, Mario Kart or whatever. It's actually playing Wolfenstein. I mean, it was like, you know, first person shooter, pretty seriously good graphics. Chris, what'd you think about that? You shot that in video, right?
Yeah, I mean, you can see the video right there. I was pretty impressed with just the graphical quality coming out of the Switch, because, I mean, it's a tablet. I wasn't expecting a whole lot, but the way it renders light and details I mean, it's obviously not like you're going to get on a PC in 2018, but it's a pretty compelling experience. And I like the gameplay aspect of Wolfenstein. It seems very quickly paced. The levels are very tightly designed from what I was seeing, so that you're always doing something, which is cool. Even if you're just sneaking around, there seems to be a purpose to it. So very, very impressive from that perspective. And then you got to admire these kills here.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh my goodness. Yeah. That was brutal. I think there was a lady gamer playing that, and I was like, woo, that was quick and clean. But yeah, you know,
don't mess with them.
It's yeah. Right. Seriously. So, you know, that it is impressive to see that on the Switch. And I think that's what Nintendo's really good at, and why the Switch is so successful, is that they know how to pick a genre, or even configure a game style type approach, what have you, series that just has fun gameplay. It's not about, mm-hmm. you know, a ton of horsepower and fancy graphics. It's about what can we put together on a platform that folks want to come back for night after night, day after day, to get their fix of. And then you got to hand it to Nintendo. They've done pretty well with that on modest hardware, right?
Yeah, I feel like Nintendo's always done a good job of kind of maintaining that fresh indie feel to their games, even though they're obviously a huge, massive corporation. They're not afraid to take risks with game mechanics, or even, you know, the revolutionary controllers of the Wii or whatever you want to consider. They're willing and able to take chance after chance after chance and win seemingly most of the time with their bets.
Yeah. No, you got to hand it to them. Nintendo's definitely one to watch. Good stuff there. Good to see them still making a showing at PAX East. They had their big rollout of lots of games last year at last year's PAX when the Switch was new. You also stopped by the Dell booth and you got some hands-on time with the Coffee Lake H and other 8th gen variants of Dell's new G series laptop, which is a more mainstream configuration for Dell. There it is right there, the G series gaming laptop, and sort of a derivative of Inspiron, but they're not saying Inspiron. It is a $750 to $800 machine, so budget gaming on the go. What'd you think about that? You got some close-up hands-on time with it, right?
Yeah, so these are actually super compelling because of their price point coming in, well under $1,000 to start. So we saw the Inspiron gaming laptop last year be pretty popular just for hitting the price points with the value it offered. So it's good to see Dell continuing that here. As much as we love to fall in over the Alienwares and Razers and, you know, other high-end laptops, you know, this is what people are buying so much of at the end of the day, because it's accessible, it's reasonable, it's well-balanced. These particular models are pretty nice and thin, somewhere around 25 millimeters thick. So they're not quite ultrabook status, but they're still very portable in the 15-inch form factor. There is the 17-inch option in the G3 line if you do prefer a larger screen. But they're all very, very cool notebooks. Do you notice there's not a whole lot to differentiate the G3 from the G5 and the G7? Do you want me to pause, Dave?
Yeah, no, we're back now. I don't know. I did a refresh. We went offline for a second there, but I don't know what's up.
All right. I'm not sure what was missed there. But yeah, they are very, very compelling options for the mainstream gamers. The differentiation between them isn't a whole lot, just minor things like in the G3, you will only have a 1080p option, where you can get the higher res screens in the G5 and the G7. The G7 actually lets you get up to a i9 mobile processor in there, which if you need to crunch the numbers, is definitely going to be helpful. But yeah, they all start right around that $800-ish dollar range, depending on the model. It's very nice to see.
No, they're styled well. They look well built, and yeah, you can get up to Coffee Lake H 6-core in there. There's been a lot of buzz about these laptops. It's interesting, you know, certain things sort of strike a chord. in the marketplace. And, you know, Dell's had its share with the XPS line of Limelight for sure. But we went and covered this machine, you know, at PAX, and then certainly, you know, on its announcement and release on the site at Hot Hardware, and people are coming out in droves. It's that $749 to $850 price point in a capable machine with GeForce 10 series graphics and quad core, you know, Kaby Lake R or Coffee Lake H on up is just a compelling sort of configuration that is bringing folks out. It's right. It's kind of cool. We'll have to see.
It's only a 1060 Max Q GPU, but when you have a 1080p screen, that's about all you're going to be. It's about all you're going to need to push those pixels anyways. And looks like our mascot is here.
Hey, Craig, what's real up, quick, Freckles?
I did want to say, I see your question there about which indie game impressed us. And unfortunately, I was so busy running around with the few hours I had tracking down hardware, I didn't get any hands-on time with any indie titles. Hopefully next year I'll get a chance to check out what's there, but I couldn't squeeze it in. So I don't have an answer for you. I'm sorry.
Yeah. No, they were doing some pretty interesting Splatoon stuff there. And you always see, the standard issue stuff for Nintendo, good gaming chops for sure. One last thing, we'll talk about AVA Direct. They had an interesting, I don't know if you stopped by their booth and saw the PUBG-themed killer gaming rig. That was kind of cool. Our buddy there, Shannon, was tasked with putting something together on a pretty quick turnaround and fashioned, I don't know if you can pull that up easily, John, the bottom link, AVA Direct Rocks custom PUBG-themed killer gaming rig at PAX East. And what he did was they actually, it's kind of hard to see there, but, you know, really nice, you know, lit, you know, logo on the front, all that good stuff. But inside, he actually fashioned the components. The piping looks like sort of like piping that you might see in a building in PUBG. And then he's got the airdrop box is it's actually one of the reservoirs for the cooling. And his SATA SSDs look like crates, and it's actually really cool. A modded high-end gaming rig. I think it was one of the Skylake X variant CPUs with a 1070 Ti on board, but heavily overclocked and water-cooled all around, including the GPU. the folks at AVA Direct, if you haven't checked them out, they've been good friends of ours for a while now, and they make some pretty interesting stuff on the high-end PC. They also do some government work for computing, but they'll do some custom boutique-style builds as well. And that rumor is they're coming out with a new offering there, focusing a little bit more on pre-built off-the-shelf ready-made stuff versus super expensive boutique custom stuff. So did you swing by that booth? You see that?
I did check that out and was admiring the very tight, clean lines with the tubing and wiring and everything while keeping the theme. I was very impressed with that. And also noticed that they had another build over at the AMD booth, which I got a shot of in the video, that had like a kind of reflective infinity lighting mirrored kind of setup on the front panel that was very cool and different.
I think that's actually, it might be an Enermax case that came that way.
Was it?
I have to double check. That's a case you can buy with that infinity lighting. I'm forgetting who made it.
Huh.
I'll just check that out. Cool. That was pretty cool.
Yeah, it's pretty. It looked pretty awesome.
Yeah, the backside of like the backside panel on that case, they actually had etched with the winner chicken dinner logo and then illuminated with LEDs straight through. Yeah, it was pretty cool stuff to see. That's AVA Direct. PAX East, always a fun take, even if you're just there kind of touring the floor versus working like us crazy animals. Thanks for coming down, Chris. I wish I got a chance to intersect with you. We were like ships passing in the night, unfortunately, though, on different days.
Yep, but that's the way it goes sometimes. So hopefully next time we can sync up, and it's definitely easier to shoot video that way.
Yeah. Having a cameraman, and then we can drink New England style IPAs afterwards too. So there.
Something like that.
Yeah, man. Something like that. So, hey, yeah, let's move on to a little happening, a little buzz in the interwebs today that actually hit this morning. And so this is fresh. This is hot off the press, as they say. And speculation over senior AMD execs' departure. Farewell, Chris Hook. There he is of AMD. That was a bit of a bombshell, I will be honest with you. We did not expect this. Chris has been at AMD since before AMD Radeon was, you know, RTG, and back in the day when they were ATI before AMD acquired them. And he is a senior guy that we have dealt with for, I don't know, Marco, probably what, better part of 15 years, maybe longer.
Longer. My first trip to Vegas for the site was to a Comdex in 2002, and I partied with Hook.
Wow.
Yeah.
We're dating ourselves. we've actually been, yeah, I know, right? We've actually been on the internet since it was like string in a tin cup, you know, back when, you know, websites, you know, just cobbled static HTML together in 99. That's when we started. And yeah, we dealt with the ATI boys and Chris Hook and Terry Makedon, right? Am I saying that name right? We've dealt with him forever. Am I saying that right? Makedon,
Makedon? Yeah, that night at Comdex was me, Chris Hook, and Terry Makedon. Yep. The catalyst maker, if you follow him on Twitter.
Dude, those guys back in the day could go hard.
Terry has not slowed down at all. Chris, maybe a little. Still a fun guy. Yeah. Terry has not slowed down.
Animal. One bit. There is a certain endurance or stamina that goes on when those two are together. And we had many of fun times with those guys. And Chris has given notice at AMD. Now, if you're not familiar with Chris Hook, he's actually global director of marketing. And so a high level exec tasked with delivering the message on both AMD CPU and GPU products. Now he was RTG or Radeon Technologies Group exclusive for a while. He'd always been, he came into AMD as the GPU guy, but had taken on a bigger role because, you know, he's a creative, energetic guy, and they obviously entrusted him with that role. Marco, your thoughts on this and what does it mean for AMD? And we certainly can speculate where he may end up with his friend Raja, right? Who recently left as well from the RTG group.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what to make of it. RTG is obviously going through lots of changes with Raja's exit. Anybody who's followed the site for a long time or followed graphics for a long time will have known, you know, lots of the Radeon events have taken place at sort of exotic locations, Tunisia on the USS Hornet, Iceland. You know, we've done some, like, literally AMD has, when they're briefing the press, they've been known, well, ATI and AMD have been known for sometimes going to these exotic locales. And that is Chris Hook's signature. You know, he's a creative guy. And he always wanted to go above and beyond and do something nuts to make sure it was a memorable tech day. So you not only got really cool tech information, but, you know, remember the experience learning about it. That's what Hook is known for, you know, inner circles inside the industry. Wherever he ends up, he is going to be an asset. The guy is a pro. He knows his stuff. He is a fantastic speaker. You know, he was close with Raja. We'll see. You know, Intel's going to be doing graphics. That news has broke. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, yeah. It would not surprise me at all if he ended up in Intel. That's a logical move. I don't know, you know, what goes on, you know, in those types of high-level exec transactions where folks can either have I think non-competes are a thing of the past, but non-recruits definitely come into play. And so it's a delicate line to walk for sure, but it would make sense. And certainly now that Intel has, you know, all but formally come out and said, yeah, we're in, I mean, they have come out and said, we're in, you know, discrete graphics. And that was, you know, the move with Raja. And so it makes a lot of sense, but wherever he goes, you're absolutely right. He will be, a huge asset because he's had decades of experience in this and knows the market, knows the players, knows the press, is well respected, and comes with a body of knowledge that is, like I said, a couple of decades of AMD marketing behind him. So, you know, and really what, and let's be honest, Marco, you see if you agree with me on this, what really, frankly, especially recently, has been a tough gig. I mean, AMD has been playing catch up on the GPU side of things. CPU side, hey, Ryzen's like, yeah, baby. You know, if you're a marketing guy and you've got the Ryzen brand, you know, you've got some great tools there, and it's really a great bright point for AMD. Vega, not so much. It was potent. And Radeon RX, you know, before that, or not RX Vega, but the 500 series, you know, playing catch up to NVIDIA, to their arch rival NVIDIA. That's a tough row to hoe if you're a marketing guy, and he probably got more bang for his buck for sure, right?
I mean, even with struggles on the graphics side, they increased AMD share in graphics. So yeah, I mean, he did a fantastic job. So we'll see what happens moving forward.
Yeah. It's interesting to watch. There's this market these days, you know, it seems like every year we say this, you know, man, there's amazing stuff going on. And we're always sort of, you know, we're always sort of caught a little bit flat footed once in a while by things. And we learned, try not to be surprised, because, you know, in this, especially in tech, it's ever changing, ever evolving, and just perpetual change is what happens. But
and ever, this is one other thing that I've learned in this industry is even when someone leaves a position like this, they almost always turn back up and we work with them again. Like, there has been a handful of people that have disappeared from the industry when they left a major position, but it's kind of a smaller community than you'd think. Everybody, you keep those relationships alive, because someone will pop up in another spot and you'll be working with them again.
You never know. Yeah. You never know where folks are going to end up. That is a cardinal rule of business. If you're smart enough, you got to pay attention to that, because folks move on and show up in another place, and, you know, another relationship. So it's good stuff. We wish Chris farewell, sir, and good luck, and best of luck in your next endeavor, your next adventure. We're sure it's going to be an adventure wherever this guy heads to, because he's full of passion and color and life. He's, you know, it's really, you think about the old ATI crew from back in the day, just a good, fun loving bunch of guys and girls that just, you know, went out and did it right and just had fun with it. And yeah, good relationships over many years. We're looking forward to continue those. So, all right. So there's the rumor. We put it out there. We'll see where he ends up. Chris Hook of AMD moving on into the sunset. All right. So let's wrap up on a couple of quick things. Chris, you took a look at something that is also a tough gig these days. The Dell Latitude 7390 2-in-1 review, a convertible built for business. Convertibles are a tough gig. You're talking about thin and light convertible machines that, you know, adjust into tablet mode and other more hyper portable use cases, but have to pack some horsepower to boot. How did Dell do with this one?
So overall, I think they did pretty well. It's a very nice looking machine. It's very ergonomic, and you know, obviously it comes back into a tablet. What especially impressed me with this was the ActivePen integration they have, because, you know, a lot of these PCs have tried their pen integration, and there always just seems to be a little bit of lag or something to it that keeps me from reaching for the pen, because it's just not natural. But the Dell, I don't know if it's just because it's the newer generation hardware or what exactly, but it traces the pen very, very naturally. So whether you're retouching photos like I was doing with it, or you know, you're a digital artist. Sorry, I can't draw. I'm not even going to try showing you my little doodles.
Come on now, hang on. You can do that.
You know, it's going to be a very workable system for you. On the flip side of it, though, no pun intended, The thermals were a little lacking on this. It's just got a tiny little blower fan in there. So when you're pushing this hard for things like rendering or other straight out tasks, it's not going to quite keep up with the cooling, and you're going to see thermal throttling. We were running Cinebench, for example. Almost immediately, it was dropping from its, you know, targeted turbo of 4.2 gigahertz with the i7-8650U down to around 2.9 gigahertz, and then, you know, a few seconds later, down to 2.5 gigahertz. So you're missing out on a lot of power there that you could have from the chip, which is disappointing. But I think if you pair this with something like an i5, you're not going to hit that thermal threshold so quickly, and you may get more value out of the chip you go with. So that is something to consider. But the build quality on it is, I mean, it's a high-end Dell Latitude. It's very solid. No issue there.
Gotcha. Yeah, you know, and we could take a step back on that thermal, you know, and the throttling side of things with the machine. And we should be clear, that is indicative of just about every thin and light notebook on the market, and almost bar none. There's some level of thermal saturation over time that happens, and depending on the form factor, depending on the machine and how it's designed, that level and that varying degree of throttling is either more or less. And in this case, as you pointed out, you know, a high-end Core i7 turboing up, you know, north of 4 gigahertz on a quad core is a little too much for this machine. And so maybe a Core i5 is money better spent versus, you know, buying a higher end config that will throttle down. But a lot of the machines out there, you know, I haven't tested a notebook, an ultrabook lately that doesn't throttle somewhat. It's just how much, right?
Right. So absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. But, yeah, no, I think that's, you know, that's almost a food for thought for us in terms of our process moving forward, is maybe we start looking at a little bit more specifically how much a machine throttles and then making recommendations on configurations and the process. I think that's probably valuable information for folks, any notebook, any thin and light anyways, maybe a gaming notebook, boat anchor, you don't have to worry about that, but any ultrabook style machine or 2-in-1, maybe we have a section that says, you know, here's what we think the sweet spot config is for the CPU in terms of its thermal capacity. What do you think?
Right. And I do want to stress too, on the thermal throttling, that is an issue when you're maxing it out. If you're doing mixed workloads where the processor is not staying pinned at its highest frequency all the time, you know, you're not going to see those slowdowns. So, you know, you're still going to get the responsiveness out of the i7. It's just those sustained loads. It's just something to be aware of. Where, like with the XPS that we reviewed before that we were looking at, it has a special sauce cooling system, Gore-Tex material or something, I think they throw in there, that does do a better job of keeping it cool. So if you are doing something that's, you know, laying down the pedal there, then that may be what you want to look at. But for most use cases, for most business purposes, I think this is going to be fine. You might see some longer render times if you do that occasionally. Yeah, there's your XPS 2-in-1.
So if you really need the
horsepower side of things, that's probably the better option. But this is a very sleek, workable solution. So if you are working with spreadsheets and then doing some digital art or something like that, this is an excellent option.
Especially with what? Oh, the pen. Yeah, you keep clicking that. It's driving me nuts.
I'm sorry.
It's just a little strong.
I appreciate that it's there and accessible, and I did find myself actually using it, which I'm not a stylist person.
Because it was neatly accessible. Yeah. No, they did a good job with that on the implementation. But yeah, and that's, I think, is interesting to point out. The XPS 15 2-in-1 has a dual heat pipe, dual fan, with Gore layer, which is more for thermal isolation away from your hands. But they developed a cooling system there that I think they're going to parlay, and it would make sense that they would parlay that into other machines because it does do a good job of that Kaby Lake G chip, that hybrid Intel AMD chip. We have a full review on Hot Hardware for that, by the way. Video review just went up on YouTube today. Great machine in terms of maintaining its performance over time and relative to thermal throttling. So yeah.
I guess with the Gore layer, they don't have to be as aggressive about cooling it because it has that separation. It's not going to get uncomfortable to use.
Right. Yeah. Good stuff. Yeah, I know the folks at Dell, they have their eye on the ball these days. Let's wrap up real quick on a note of AMD. And actually, Craig in the chat had a couple of questions. Marco, I don't know if you have an opinion on this. Any comments on the downclocked? Well, this is NVIDIA. And also 500 series, which is AMD. So downclocked at 1030 DDR4 or 500 X series OEM refresh from AMD. Any thoughts on that, Marco?
Yeah, Craig's just popped another question and I'll get to them all. So the 1030 DDR4, it kind of happens sometimes. These low-end graphics cards, they sort of get updated mid-life. As DDR3 production ramps down, the availability of DDR4, it's just more widely available, and it's I think, at this point, cheaper than DDR3. So, they're just refreshing the line with DDR4. These are for low-end basic setups. It is what it is. I'm not sure everybody's PC will be lower clocked, but that's what's happening there. DDR3 is on the way out. DDR4 is just more widely available. As for the Radeon RX 500X series refresh, not going to say too much other than, you know, Polaris has been in production for a while. The memory used on those cards has been in production for a while. So with some slight turning of the knobs and some tweaked cooling, you could see some significant performance gains coming from a refresh. May or may not be happening, probably going to happen sooner rather than later. And Craig has also just asked, have we reached a point where laptops have gotten too thin? No, we haven't reached a point where they've gotten too thin. We've reached a point where some manufacturers with some models just don't care about the cooling as much, because with short bursty workloads, a basic cooler is enough. It's when you have that long sustained heavy workload that saturates the cooler, that's when you throttle. But if you look at something like the latest XPS 13, you know, where Dell sort of over-engineered the cooling on purpose, that thing rocks. You know, the XPS 13 9370 is like the fastest ultrabook, and it's a thin 13-inch machine because Dell specifically put in engineering effort on the cooling.
Which also adds weight.
Yeah, I think if people clamor for that, if people recognize that kind of effort, which is why guys like us talk about it and why I'm bringing that machine up specifically right now, because that sort of engineering effort makes a real world difference in extended workload periods. So it is simply a faster machine because of that effort Dell put in. So yeah, it's not that it's too thin, it's that the cooler engineering sort of, you know, they got to spend the money to do it. Dell did it on the XPS 13. It doesn't happen on every machine right now. That's all it is.
And the flip side, if all you're doing is web browsing or maybe doing some documents, whatever, with your computer, we're probably not thin enough yet because those just don't use a lot of computing power. You know, you can put a passively cooled processor in there and it's going to be fine. So it all depends on what your use case is in how thin you can go, how much you can cram into that form factor.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. I think what a lot of folks have come to realize in with respect to ultrabooks, especially, which is, you know, whether you talk about the XPS 13 and 15 or Lenovo's ThinkPad X1 series or Apple's, you know, MacBook Air, all that, you know, super thin and light stuff. It's not so much about getting the most, you know, the ultimate thinness or the lightest machine you can get your hands on. It's about striking a balance of thin and light plus usability and feature set and really the experience. And I think that's where a lot of the Windows 10 machines that are doing so well, whether it be the ThinkPad X1 line from Lenovo or Dell's XPS, which has done very well for the company lately, that's called striking a balance between, you don't have to go crazy thin, you don't have to go crazy light. You just engineer it well so it's comfortable, light, and balanced, and you can do some pretty impressive stuff these days in terms of horsepower in, you know, a 3-pound footprint. It's good stuff. Impressive. So, all right. Well, let's wrap up with the final tease, Marco. Let's talk about what we've got to give away this month at hothardware.com that we're absolutely going to award some lucky winner a custom built machine by you.
Yes, we sure are. So, we are going to give away a AMD Raven Ridge based rig with a Ryzen 5 APU in there, in a really cool ASRock motherboard, and along with it some awesome Corsair accessories and peripherals. We have the beautiful Corsair Crystal Series 570X case. We have the Corsair K70 Rapid Fire keyboard, the Glaive, I'm assuming I'm pronouncing that right, RGB mouse, awesome power supply, Corsair Vengeance memory. So as soon as this contest wraps in a couple of weeks, I will put that machine together on video and ship it off to the winner. And to win, it really can't be easier. Come by the site, participate in our comment section, make some like-minded friends, like a couple of Facebook pages, and that's really it. So if you like to chat with other geeks, just come by the site and chat with other geeks, make some good comments, and you got a chance to win.
There you go. Get noticed. And thanks to the folks at AMD and Corsair for sponsoring that giveaway this month. We try and do it every month and give away something special, whether it be a custom-built gaming PC like this, courtesy a la Marco, or laptops, and we've given away all kinds of stuff, tablets, all kinds of stuff over the years, and we try and do it almost every month. So swing on by hothardware.com, where you can find us on the web, youtube.com/hothardware, where hopefully we're gonna have you hit subscribe and then also hit that notification button when we go live and stream. We tried and be here every Wednesday night at 5:30. Tonight we had to push back a little bit due to some scheduling, but you can also find us at twitter.com/hothardware, facebook.com/hothardware, and we're on Google+ Hot Hardware. So yeah, there you go. We're everywhere. We're like the scourge of the internet, right, fellas?
Exactly.
And on that note, we will say thanks for stopping by.